brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Cereal Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Miss Tammy Lee of TripleCrownConcert.com in Pensacola, Florida. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Einwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Conjurman Ali of ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California. We have a very special show today, and Miss Kat will be filling y'all in on this here shortly in just a few moments. And everyone who's listening, you can learn a lot just by listening to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. And if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We will be going to the phones in a little while, but first, we're going to go ahead and catch up with our co-hosts, Miss Kat and Conjurman Ali. Miss Kat?
Hi, Tammy Lee. Well, you know, this has been a strange winter. We just lost Dr. E, our great colleague and member of AIR, and we were did a memorial show for him, and then we ran one of his old shows as sort of as a, you know, a tribute sample of what a wonderful person and speaker he was on AIR and what a great contributor he was to the Lucky Mojo Curio Company. And we were intending this week to return to our call-in format and with Professor Ames, but we just received word recently that another member of AIR has passed, and this was Reverend Rukaya Shaman. Now, it's interesting. AIR is comprised of people from all different regions of the country, all different backgrounds and walks of life. You couldn't really imagine two people more different than Dr. E and Rukaya Shaman. However, you know, God called both Eddie and Rukaya home really very close to each other in time. Ours not to ask why. We just say, all right, we're sure there's a reason here, but I'm also going to just go on record saying, and they say bad luck comes in threes, and I just hope this is we stop at two, okay? Let's send up a little prayer for that. Mm-hmm. Now, Rukaya was a good friend of mine, and she wasn't one of these, you know, splashy out front people in the conjure community the way that Eddie was, although she had much more history in root work and conjure than Eddie did or ever could have. She lived in Ohio, and she worked mostly locally in Ohio. But she came from a long family background of root work, and I'm going to talk about that in a little while. But it's something I just want to mention to start off with. After we announced her death, many people would post on Facebook, oh, too bad I didn't know her. Well, it is too bad you didn't know her. And not only the great personalities can transmit and teach root work, Rukaya was there. She had students there in Ohio. Rukaya dealt with people hands-on. She was in her mid-50s when she passed, and she had been doing this work, well, since a child, because her grandfather was a professional root worker in Tennessee. So she represents the passing of a direct line of transmission. The real authentic conjure, not something that you picked up by looking on the internet at a Wicca website or something that kind of resembles Santeria a little bit or something you signed up to get plagiarized books from some crazy person who's going to send you plagiarized books by BitTorrent. I mean, I'm talking about somebody who really knew this work. She didn't boast or brag. She just knew this work. So the passing of Rukaya is a great loss to our community, and it's a loss that is sad to me because of how few people took advantage of the fact that here was an African-American woman, practiced conjure all her life from Tennessee, whose grandfather was a professional conjure doctor, and they didn't see it, you know. Now, she didn't hide her light under a bushel, but they didn't see it. And so I'm going to be talking about her a little bit and what she represented to me as a teacher. Here I am teaching conjure. Lady comes to me, 10 years younger than me, but much more involved from childhood than I was. You know, I joined into this community and culture around the age of 14. She was born into it. So my 10 years older than her, that didn't mean nothing. She had it 24 hours a day growing up around her grandfather. So I look at that, and I think, I she took my course, but I wouldn't have called myself her teacher, really. We were equals. We were exchanged recipes. We exchanged ideas. We exchanged tricks and knowledge and things like that. So we're going to be talking about Rukaya. I'm going to probably have a bit to say, but I want to say hello to you, Ollie, first. And
hello.
I'm encouraging anybody who's in the chat room who knew her, who had a reading with her, who knew anything about her, raise your hand, make yourself available. Nagashiva will get you on the air. I know it's not going to be that huge outpouring of emotion as it was when Eddie passed. Eddie's passing was unexpected. He was in the prime of his young life. Rukaya had been ill for a long time, and those of us who knew her knew she had a terminal illness. That's just the truth of it. But we're not going to dwell on that. We're going to talk about what we know about her, and I'm going to tell people a little bit about what they missed and how. And I'm probably going to rant a little bit later on in the hour about how flashiness and showiness is not the real key to conjure, that a real worker like Rukaya, well, as they say, she knew more than her little in her little finger than many people know in their whole body, okay? That's an old statement, and it's true in her case. All right, so anyway, we're going to be talking about that, and I hope that everybody who does remember her and knows where she came from will pitch in and help me out here, because this is a memorial tribute to her. Now, I'm going to say hi to you, Ollie. You knew Rukaya.
I did. And though, you know, you said she was ill for a while and both of us knew this, that doesn't make her passing any less sad. And the community certainly lost a wonderful healer, a wonderful teacher, and a wonderful root doctor. I remember having her on the show a couple of times, and every time she just would give some of the most insightful, brilliant works for clients. She really knew how to hone down. And those who knew her personally knew her as a very gentle and insightful individual. And I was not as close to her as you were, but I did have the fortune of speaking to her on several occasions, and I was touched every single time I talked to her.
Yeah, she was a very helpful person. Now I'm gonna fill in a little bit of her history here that I know. I mentioned her grandfather was a professional conjure doctor. Now in those days in Tennessee, a root doctor was someone who could also, you know, set bones, deliver a baby, help someone through an illness, right? So her grandfather, unlike many of today's so-called conjure doctors, today's so-called, you know, great machers, as we call them in Yiddish, that she came from a family in which healing was one of the major arts. In other words, it ain't all about the magic spells and the power of voodoo and all that. No. It was about, you've got that bronchial cough. Let's see what herbs we can get you. Right? So she knew the real deal. She knew how to prepare herb baths. If you go to her air page, and I'm sure they put a link on it, you'll see an herb bath in a little plastic bucket with herbs in it. She did those foot washes. She did sponge baths. She did all that stuff. She knew how to prepare tea, a sweat tea. She knew how to prepare, a warming tea, a cooling tea, all of those things she learned from her grandfather. Now, I'm going to take you back a little farther. Now, all of you all know who have listened to me talk, hoodoo is African-American, and you can see by Rukaya's picture, she was African-American. But what you may not see, unless you look closer at those pictures, is she was also Native American. And at least a quarter, I'm not sure exactly how much Native American, but I think it was on both sides of her family. And she considered herself a Cherokee Indian. In other words, she was Cherokee from Tennessee. This is where the Cherokee were displaced when they were forced westward from their original territory. They were forced westward into Tennessee, even into parts of Missouri and Arkansas. And there's a story there. The Cherokee Indians kept slaves, just like white people kept slaves, but their idea of slavery was different. Your children weren't made to be slaves, and you could buy your own freedom, and you could even marry somebody in the tribe, and then you wouldn't be a slave anymore. And slaves were not kept so apart or subjected to such horrible punishments as among the white people. But the Cherokees did fight on the side of the Confederacy, most of them, during the Civil War, because they did have slaves, although, like I said, their idea of slavery was different, but it was part of their tribal beliefs. Now, we all romanticize American Indians, oh my gosh, those fabulous Aboriginal Native people, but hey, some of the tribes kept slaves. And you have to think about that and its relationship to black slaves. Now, if you ran away from your white slave master and joined the Cherokee, they might take you in as a slave. They might consider you a free man. It's however you could position yourself. But at least you were going to get better treatment than among the whites. And so there were black people who made an effort to get sold to Cherokee slave buyers. Also, there were people who ran away and joined remnant bands of Cherokee, Choctaw, Chippewa, Saponi, and other smaller tribes as they were being pushed westward. There was one tribe, for instance, the Chickamaugas, who accepted runaway white servants and black slaves and Indians of any tribe because they were all kind of displaced persons. So her background is Cherokee and black. But the slaves who came over to America, they were not permitted to bring herbs with them or anything like that. So as all of you all know who've listened to me talk, read my books, the herb usage in hoodoo is largely derived from Native American herb usage plus European magical herb usage, magical and medical herb usage, Jewish magical and medical herb usage, and even some Asian and South American herb usage that came in through the pharmaceutical trades. So that's what her grandfather was practicing. Down in Tennessee, it was a headquarters for hoodoo supply shops. There was Schwab's in Memphis. There was the Keystone, the Reliable Company in Memphis. There was the Lucky Heart Company, the Lucky Mongol Company, Collins Labs, Joplings of Greater Memphis. All of these companies manufactured hoodoo goods and herbal compounds around Memphis. It was a big area that where this was happening. Now, she grew up with this grandfather who practiced herbal healing, and she learned herbal healing. But I haven't mentioned her father, and this is what she told me. Her father wanted to be a healer, but felt that grandpa's ways were old-fashioned. Of course, this is the time when people began to say, oh, herb healing isn't efficient enough. We need to have powders, and we need to have capsules, and we need to have injections, and all the other trappings of modern allopathic medicine. And so her grandfather saved up money, and her father saved up money, and the father was put through a regular medical school, and he became a medical doctor. So he left behind the hoodoo path. He left behind the down-home country methods of herbal and roots work, and certainly left behind the, quote, superstitious, unquote, magical portion of the work. But Rukaya still loved that work. Now, Rukaya went on to become a minister. We call her Reverend Rukaya. That's no lie. She was a minister.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her late ex-husband, they divorced, and then he died. Make it simply understood here, her late ex-husband and she, his name was Marcus, they had a church together, and she was a pastor, and so was he. They co-pastored. This was a New Thought church. Now, if you want to know about the New Thought movement and its relationship to hoodoo, you can look that up at the AIR website. New Thought was a a form of religion that was based around physical healing. It started off with the idea that you draw health to yourself through your belief. And it has split up into several different subgroups, one of which is Christian Science, which has never used medicine, only used prayer. And there are other New Thought groups like the Religious Science and other, you know, Church of Divine Science, Home of Truth, and so forth, that where medical and spiritual work go together. And, you know, you've all heard of the Law of Attraction or The Secret or, you know, those people.
All of them.
Right. Well, New Thought was the denomination or a group of denominations in which Rukaya practiced. And she told me she had been greatly influenced by the works of Ernest Holmes. And that's an interesting sidelight, too, on Hoodoo, African American Society. Of all of the different New Thought churches, Religious Science and Unity both accept black people and have all along. But Religious Science has a higher percentage, we don't know why, just friendlier, to African American congregants. And you can see that all over the country. But Unity is another one of these. You know, there's just so many of these different New Thought churches. But they had their own. And they pastored a large flock. This was not a little storefront church. I might have started off that way, but it was not. They had outreach, and one of Rukaya's major interests in outreach was good diet. She was convinced that the African-American community was suffering from eating poorly, eating fast food. She was very concerned about, you know, the obesity epidemic and things like, you know, the increase in diabetes and heart disease and asthma among black people, especially because some of those are related to environment. They're not all genetic. You know, like if you live near a freeway and you're breathing in all those pollutants that come off the freeway, you get asthma. Well, they cut the freeways through the black ghettos, right? I mean, they did it on purpose. They don't want to ruin their own pretty white neighborhoods, so they made a whole generation of black kids get asthma. So she was real aware of this. She was very political. She did outreach for senior citizens. She did food preparation. And she also taught lectures on good diet, you know, like eat your fruits and vegetables. And don't just be eating that, you know, that silly Mac burger or whatever, you know. And while she was doing all of that, in her church work, at the same time, she was ministering to her flock. So this was a lady who had quite a career in the area of where she had moved to, Cleveland, Ohio. Now, she and her husband, as I said, ministered this flock, and then, well, their marriage came to an end, and I don't need to tell any tales, but their marriage came to an end, and shortly thereafter, the church came to an end. And she was then basically started over, like so many women do who go through a divorce. She had built something very large and very popular locally with her ex-husband, and now she was on her own. Tell me about it. I've been there, done that. I bet half the women in this chat room can raise their hands and say amen to that one, right? Women tend to give more into a partnership like that and take away less when it ends financially. So she started a massage studio. She also still gave lectures. She had a food, a restaurant. She did a healthy food restaurant. She did many things in her life. I mean, she had a full life. This was not a young kid who said, I want to do hoodoo. This was a woman who knew how to bake bread. This was a woman who knew, you know, why you should eat salads and what wild-crafted things you could find around that you could put in your salads. She knew a lot. And and she gave... she gave very, very freely to the community. Well, she did massage therapy. She, unlike these little young kids who are like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do hands-on healing, she actually lived her practice. She gave senior citizen discounts to people who needed massage therapy. She also started a salon, Absolutely Divine Salon, and it was involved in many hoodoo connections always with the world of cosmetics and toiletries. She did facials and all sorts of interesting modalities of healing and therapy. Now, this is where we get to something interesting to me. There are people like me who are preservationists of hoodoo. I was so privileged to be able to learn this stuff from these older women. I thought I must preserve it. Rukaya came out of that, and she goes, what else is there in the world? She went out and studied Reiki. She was the first Reiki practitioner I ever met. First Reiki master I ever met was Rukaya. And there was that little moment in me where I go, well, I just wanted to meet a black hoodoo worker, and she's a Reiki master, you know what I mean? And I was like, but I got it. She really did consider herself a citizen of the world. Her interest in homeopathic medicine, her interest in Reiki, her interest in Native American practices, which came from a submerged part of her own family's past, led her in many, many directions. She was as eclectic as anyone could be. So she wasn't just some little down-home girl from Tennessee who, you know, grew up in some sort of idolized, primitivistic idea of a black society. Far from it. She traveled, she learned, she went everywhere, she learned so many things. And I think the New Thought movement opened her up to things like Reiki. She divined with a crystal ball. She was a gifted intuitive diviner, but she loved her crystal ball. And she used that and a black mirror. You're going on a black mirror. I mean, she'd mess with anything that interested her. And she was a symbol to me of the inclusiveness of hoodoo and the inclusiveness of root work practices while still retaining that firm core. And then I'm going to tell you one more thing about her. She was a Cherokee, like I said, black Cherokee. But I'm just going to say, you can all look it up. You know, I don't have to rant too long about it. But the Cherokee Indians never kind of reconciled themselves to the fact that they were black Cherokees. The Cherokee Indians now are what I would just call racists, and I'm going to leave it at that. Not all Cherokees. I'm saying the leaders of the tribe. They went through a deal because, hey, there's a lot of wealth to be had being a Cherokee Indian. There's oil lands in Oklahoma, and then there's all these casinos, right? And once the casino movement started, Native Americans began to think of ways to exclude people because they wanted to, you know, keep the money in smaller and smaller hands and groups of hands. And that is understandable. Human greed is understandable. But one of the things the Cherokee Nation did in Oklahoma was to expel black members, to declare that there was no way of proving that they were Cherokee by blood, saying, well, you were a slave of ours, but you're not really one of us, even if you have our last name, even if we know, you know. It was shameful. There are books on it. There's a number of books celebrating black Indians, websites celebrating black Indians, but the Cherokee tribe has a lot to answer for, and they will answer for it, and they will change their mind, just the way, you know, social things happen. Right now, they're in a dark moment. But when that happened, Rukaya was hurt, really hurt, and she told me about this. She said it just hurt beyond belief. She was part of what's called powwow culture. Now, this is intertribal powwows, often with remnant people from remnant tribes, and they get together and they often will do what you might call intertribal forms of dance and costuming and drumming and celebration. Foods and things, and sometimes they'll be one tribe specific, but usually powwows involve people who are scattered about the United States but come from different tribal or mixed tribal backgrounds or are part European-American, part Black American, whatever. So she was part of powwow culture. She loved powwow culture, and she was at a powwow, and the news had just come down that the Cherokees decided that Black Cherokees were just not Cherokees anymore. And she was talking about this with a man from the Ojibwe tribe. Now, that's a tribe up north, up by Canada. And this guy said to her, he was chief of the Ojibwe tribe, and he said to her, that is a crime and a shame, and the Cherokees will regret this. And she was, you know, pretty distraught. really distraught, let's just say. And he said to her, you know, we Ojibways accept everyone. If you're an Indian, you can become an Ojibwe. And he took her over, and they had a ceremony to adopt her into the Ojibwe tribe. And I once made the mistake of saying to her, well, da-da-da, your Cherokee background. She goes, I no longer have a Cherokee background. I'm an Ojibwe.
Mm-hmm.
She had a sharp way about her. She wasn't all sweetness and light, and she did not forgive.
She didn't mince words.
No, she didn't. She didn't forgive the Cherokees for what they said, that the black Cherokees could not be proven to be Cherokee. And she said that she'd even run across resistance in the black community. She said, I don't have to follow a black man's path. I can follow a red man's path. Those were her own words. And so she, obviously, you look at her, a lady was wearing sister locks, and she's, you know, there she is, dark-skinned and all. But she considered herself from her middle age onward as an Ojibwe Indian and was accepted as such in the Ojibwe tribe. Now, I find that another example of her wide-ranging eclecticism and her great spirit that she was recognized and accepted into the Ojibwe tribe. If you look at the pictures of her work at AIR on her webpage, you'll see many feathers are used in her work. There are little whisks and feather whisks. There are feathers laid out in spells. I don't know that she ever did a spell without a feather in it or two or more. She always worked with feathers. It's a very Indian way to work, Native American way to work, but it was particularly a Rukaya way to work. She and I talked about, you know, hen feather whisks and buzzard wing whisks. She had all that. And she had many other, she would purchase and display many different feather whisks. She found them to be, I guess you could say, evocative, totemic to her. And she worked with them when healing clients. She would brush them down with feathers. And she would work with feathers when she would lay out an altar work, you know, with candles or something, a feather to represent each person in the work. It was uniquely Rukaya, and it was also part of her Native American work, and something that she had also inherited from her grandfather, who did use buzzard wings and buzzard feathers in his work. So those are some of the things that I know about Rukaya. Now, for those who are unknowing of her, I can say that, you know, she developed cancer, and she had colon cancer. And it's a slow-grinding disease, and eventually, you know, it ground her down. But she fought a good fight. She did everything she could to prolong her life, and she did so. And when she passed, strangely and sadly, she was online at Hoodoo Psychics. And her Hoodoo Psychics line stayed on because she didn't turn it off. And toward the end of her life, she was still teaching. She would teach workshops and things like that. But she had to close her salon, the massage parlor and therapeutic salon. She just couldn't get up and do that work anymore. And she continued as a reader, reading on the telephone, doing intuitive psychic readings and giving Reiki treatments, and of course setting lights for people and reading her crystal ball in her home up to the very end. And she kept a great spirit, a great positive attitude, and she did not give in, you know, until the cancer beat her.
Yeah, so she was on the phone all the way until she died, obviously.
That's right. She was on the phone until she died, and I call that dedication and strong heart. She had a strong heart. She wasn't going to give in. All right. Well, that's what I know about Rukaya, and I wanted to kind of let people know about that. Now, I'd like to go to our usual break, and we're going to come back and let other people have some things to say about this, or if questions to ask about how she worked. I'd be glad to answer anything I know. All right, so let's take it away, Miss Tammy Lee.
Yes, ma'am, Miss Kat. Y'all, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with your hosts, Catherine Einwood and Kanjaman Ali. We'll be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners in just a little while, answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our calling clients are selected from among those who have filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or by telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. If you have filled out a client questionnaire at the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. Callers are selected by their area code, and if your area code is announced, we'd like for you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Ms. Timmy Lee, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our hosts.
And I'm sorry, again, Tammy. I don't think we're going to be doing that today. I think we're
not
going
doing
to be
that today, sweetheart.
Settling on our regular memorial show.
Okay. All right. Got it. Okay. Just double checking. Got it. Okay. And yes, this is once again the memorial show for Reverend Rukaiya Shimon. And I'm going to go ahead and turn this back over to you, Ms. Kat.
All right. Well, I'm going to just reiterate here. We won't be accepting calls for readings and root work. Okay. You know, I see in the chat room that Lorinda Shire says that she had a reading with Reverend Rukaiya, and I see Madam Nadia is there, and other people from AIR who are in the thing, and I know that Professor Ames is also on the line. I'm going to turn this over to Professor Ames, and it's just
I'm
say what you
Ms.
remember about.
I don't
about
think Professor Ames was on this on the line at this time.
Oh, he's not. Oh, he was at
no,
one
Ms.
point.
No, Ms. Melanie is on the line instead.
Ah, Ms. Melanie, okay.
Yes, I can bring her on immediately. Sorry about that confusion.
Okay. Well,
she's
Ms.
on
Melanie,
the line now.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you all?
I'm doing fairly well as can be expected after this hard news. So let me tell the listeners a little bit about you for a second and before you speak. Ms. Melanie has a shop and is a reader and root worker in Tennessee and in Nashville. And so your shop is the Curios and Candle Shop, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And so tell us what you know about Rukaiya, what you remember about her and her work. I'd love to hear your reminiscences.
You know, she, I never really actually got to meet her, and I went before I that's why I'm coming out in May, is because of all the losses that we've had. I don't want to miss not meeting one more person before they pass away, you know in case they arrive again. That is crucial for me. You know, she had, from what people have said that I have encountered, is that she was such a wonderful spirit. There was no meanness to her. There's not a mean bone in her body. She was a wonderful healer. People would tell me of the long distance healing that she would do was just absolutely amazing, and how much better they felt afterwards. They said they just couldn't believe it.
She did a long distance healing for me. I had a little trouble with something, and she called me up. She goes, there's something wrong. And I said, well, actually, yeah, there is. And she goes, let me set that right. Just like that. Just let me set that right. And I said, well, you know, Rukaiya, I'm going to handle it myself. She goes, no. Let me set that right. She goes, just sit there for a moment. Take a deep breath. And she just did. And I guess you could call it Reiki. You could call it long distance healing. It was amazing.
Right.
And, it took all of 5 minutes and maybe 7-8 minutes. And at the end of it, she said, now, how do you feel now? And I said, I feel so much better. She goes, good. Now I'm going to give you some recipes. And she told me what I had to eat. She told me what I had to drink. And she was just as present as if she was right in front of me. And I followed all of her instructions. And I was, you know, my whatever was wrong with me went away. And She was amazing that way. So I did experience that long-distance healing as if it were hands-on healing. It really felt to me while I was sitting there as if she was literally running her hands over my body, examining me, and changing my body state. I can't explain it any better than that. If you've ever had long-distance healing, you know what I'm talking about, Melanie.
She said something along those lines to me once, and she said, we were talking on the phone about long-distance healing, and I'll tell the story in just a little bit. I'll let Melanie take over, but just briefly, she said, if I were to pinch you from where I am, you would feel it, about long-distance healing and their ability to connect and be present in that way. Even though she was away, she was right in front of you, very present, and you could feel it, her running her hands down you. And she said, if I pinch you, you would feel it. Sorry, mm-hmm. I just wanted to interject, and I can tell that story. But go on, Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
I heard exactly what you described, Ms. Kapp, is what people said, that it was just amazing, the relief. And, in times like this, it's hard to understand why. But then I guess she was needed more in heaven than here with us, which is a sad thing to think about, but at the same time, it's a rejoiceful thing to know that you're needed more somewhere else.
Yeah, she is a person who, when we talk about someone's passing, and we say, well, we would have liked her here a few more years. She was only in her mid-late 50s. But I would have liked to have had her here another 20, 30 years with me. But this was what God planned, And if nothing else, what I would like to say to people is what you just said. Make sure you know your friends. Make sure you know your colleagues. Make sure you know who it is who you're associated with and really know them. In the days of the Internet, there's people who said, but she was up in Ohio. I never met her. You could have phoned. And I tell people who join Hoodoo Psychics and people who join AIR, I tell them, do you know each other? And you know how they say, well, we have mutual friends on Facebook.
Right.
That ain't enough, baby. That ain't enough. And Rukaya had so much that she gave, but she was, a purposeful person, very purposeful person, but not a flashy person.
Well, I think that's the key there is remembering that purposefulness. I think the best way to remember Rukaya, and I think the way she would want to be remembered, is not in comparison to modern-day root workers or in comparison to anyone else for that matter, or how she was different from other people, but to allow her work to speak for itself. And what she did was quite unique, and this is something that I always found very compelling, is when I talked to her, and I only had a chance to talk to her a few times, but every time she left a very strong impact. And the reason I spoke to her is because I wanted to know about her background in root work, and we talked about Virginia and Condra and the differences. And I asked her at one point, and I said, you have all this great knowledge about traditional recipes of healing. She gave this amazing egg cleansing one, not like the egg cleansing we think of where you run an egg, but we actually cracked the egg into a bath, and it was just so powerful. And I was talking to her about this. She said something very, very important. She said, I'm just interested in healing wherever I can find it. And I think that's the important, is that she wasn't necessarily do it all, mix and match, and let's do whatever I can, but there was a very purposefulness to what she did, to what she learned, and what she practiced. It was all aimed at one specific thing, and that is preserving this idea of healing for a community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did as a person, is she was a healer for the community. Her grandfather started off as a root doctor for a very specific community of people. Her community was different, and so her healing was different. She grew because she was ministering to a different type of community. And so she did draw upon Reiki. She did draw upon, you know, naturopathy and different types of herbal remedies, as well as diet and things like that. And I think that's what made her so versatile and such a compelling person, that she was a community figure and she responded to her community's needs, whether that meant that she was going to give them a root work bath or it meant that she was going to do long-distance Reiki healing, right? She responded to the needs of her community. And I think that's the most important thing that I learned from her. And the most important thing about remembering her is not necessarily looking at her and then looking at other people, but going, this is what a real root doctor is in its essence. They serve a community, and their community may be different. Their community may be part of the internet community. They may be long distance. And you respond to that, and that's what she did. She kept the healing modalities, whatever they were, alive in her practice. And up until the end, she was a balm to the people around her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She was. You could just tell, you know, with her by her picture. You know, many people, you know, we can read pictures. That's, you know, one of our things. But you can tell in her picture that her spirit is just so pure. You know,
mm-hmm.
It was so pure. And it was so giving. And it was so honest.
Mm-hmm.
And what more could you ask for?
Now, that's, you've nailed it right there, Ms. Melanie. She was very, very present. Very, very honest. And... you know, in talking about some of these different modalities of work, and her interest in healing, I don't know that she ever did curses, but I don't know that she refrained if it was necessary. In other words, I don't think she would curse for a client, but she did. And what did she say?
Oh, and she said she doesn't do that work for clients. I asked her because this was part of our conversation about the different types of conjure and the work that we did. Now, this was Rukaya, for people that haven't been following the show, is actually one of the earliest guests we had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the first, you know, on the show, and she was brilliant. And we talked both before the show, a couple days before, and a few days afterwards, just chatting about the different differences. And we were talking about what I was good at and what she was good at. And I asked her at one point, you know, do you any type of crossing work, cursing work, or things like that? And she says, no, I don't, because I don't think it has a place in healing. Now, that doesn't mean she didn't do it if it was needed, right? But for clients, her aim was, again, wholeness, bringing things together, repairing, restoring, versus, hey, you know, you have this boss, let me curse your boss for you. So I don't
right.
think she offered it to clients. She didn't.
Yeah,
I know she did not.
Right. She did have an interest in fighting cases of racism and and cases of... legal prejudice and things like that, because she and I talked about a few of those types of cases. She did take that. I mean, she could strike if she had to strike. But she was not a cursing person. She was a defender and a healer. And I think that a good part of her clientele were older people, too. In other words, because she came out of a longstanding tradition, she didn't attract those, you know, 21-year-old girls who just broke up with their boyfriend, which are the bread and butter of so many neo-conjure practitioners, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was the person who read for and divined for the older community members, and even when she was younger than them. And she, as I said before, she used traditional scrying tools in a way very similar to you, Ms. Melanie. She was not a greatly interested in tarot or things like that. But for her, scrying, psychometry with photos, or you know, face to face, you know, crystal ball. She did use a pendulum, and those were her forms of divination, what she called usually direct intuitive gift. In other words, she was a prophet.
So she often on the show didn't use any tools. She would ask.
Right.
you could see her reading directly from spirit, and there's a very, she has a very unique style. And if anyone listens to the previous shows where she was on, you'll actually see it. And it, we don't see that on the show ever again, other than Rukaya doing it. She would ask these insightful questions, and they would get right to the core of it. It was this combination of direct prophecy and almost like a doctor interrogating, like knowing where to diagnose. She would ask
right.
a question, and it would unlock something right then and there, and that person would be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you asked that question. How did you know to ask that?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was really an important part of what she did. She would ask you for a sounding, basically, of where you were at, and then she would just speak from spirit and prescribe it. It was amazing. It really was amazing.
She, and the older people, they knew, you know, going back to the older community, they
mm-hmm.
knew that
mm-hmm.
she was what she was. You know, they could feel that. They knew. Because mm-hmm. a lot of the older community, I think, that, you know, went to her were in tune with the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that... And the, not old ways, but traditional ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did, and that's the way she was.
Yeah.
You know,
in terms of my life, I would say she was, although younger than me, was one of the best practitioners of the very old school of spiritual lady work, you know? She was a spiritual lady, they call it.
Very intense. She and I are very similar in our divination ways.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were on Hoodoo Psychics, we would always kind of be on there at the same time. She would always be on there, I think it was either Mondays or Tuesdays, in like mid-morning,
mm-hmm.
I think. And we would always be on there together. And, of course, I was just starting out. And, you know, she was getting called right and left all the time. So, you know, she had a huge following on Hoodoo Psychics as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be greatly, you know, missed. People will miss that.
Yeah.
From her,
yeah. She was a very, very strong regular logged on to Hoodoo Psychics. And I was so happy with that because although I knew that one of the reasons was her failing health, I also was so happy to know that people could hook up with someone who was for real and not one of these little poser kids, you know. But someone who really knew the work, and that made me very, very happy that she spent the last years of her life on Hoodoo Psychics. It was an opportunity that many got to connect with somebody who really had the touch, you know, the healing touch, the intuitive touch. Yeah, that was amazing to me that she spent so much time on Hoodoo Psychics, and that her following there was, they were, you know, sincere and loyal. They waited for her to come online. You know what I'm saying?
They sure did.
Yeah.
I mean, they waited for her.
Yeah.
Well,
now,
she was our go-to person for a type of healing work. Me and her, when it came to referring clients, it was interesting because she would refer clients to me when it came to some of the, like, reversal work and things like that. But when I needed someone to healing, she was my go-to person. Right. Especially for hands-on and long-distance person. So we referred clients back and forth in that way, and every client that I had sent her way always came back and said, I feel like a completely different person, a completely new person. And I think that's what's so unique is that whatever healing she did, it was always transformative, right? And that's the mark of a true healer, right? It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter whether they're lighting a candle or she did a foot wash or she did long-distance Reiki healing. She could have done any of those, right? But they always walked away transformed and different. And that's really true healing. If someone's doing healing work on you and you walk away and you don't feel transformed by it, I don't think that's real healing. Because real healing goes deep into the core of who you were. And it goes back to what she said. If I pinched you, you could feel it. And it was her talking about the ability she had of connecting spirit to spirit. It's not an ability you see very often these days. It's not an ability that's particularly common. And that's what made her really unique, is that ability to connect spirit to spirit and then transform that person. Whatever healing they needed, whatever type of people, as simple as changing their diet, as complex, as advanced, as spiritual healing, she was able to do it.
Yeah. I want to talk about something else that, again, if you go to her AIR page, which, by the way, we will have the sad job of transforming into a memorial page soon, but it's right up now. you'll see a picture of a proxy doll. Now, a lot of you people don't know what a proxy doll is, right? But take a look at that picture. And that is of a it's a fairly large doll. She sewed that doll. That was a proxy doll for a client. And the proxy dolls are dolls that are used for long-distance physical healing ceremonies in which the person cannot be present. Proxy dolls can be made of almost anything, twigs or rope or, you know, tied in knots or cloth like her proxy doll, even a plastic doll maybe from the dime store. But she made this proxy doll, and you can see that the proxy doll is lying there, and it obviously represents an African-American woman. You can see from the way it looks and the way it's dressed. And it was there around it, there are little candle lights and tea lights and other candles and stuff. There are other things in there. She would make these proxy dolls for clients and then would work with the doll to do the healing. I asked her about that. I said, what do you do? She goes, well, she liked to smudge them with incense because they were, you know, cloth dolls stuffed with batting. But they also were usually made out of part of the clothing of the client. They would send her a piece of clothing. She would sew it into the doll or sew the doll's clothing out of it. They might have some other personal concern of that person in the heart of the doll. She also had she would put their petition papers, their letter, this is what's wrong with me, my rheumatism is, you know, bothering me, and the doll would be laid upon that paper. And you don't see that in that picture. I don't know if there is a paper in that picture, but she told me that she would put those letters from people under the doll. Sometimes she would use for people who had no money, and she didn't turn away anybody for lack of money. If they would just write to her and say, well, I need healing for this, and someone else would write, she'd put those papers, several papers, under her under a large proxy doll and then pray over that doll for the healing of all. But usually if she had a client who wanted the healing, she would work with these dolls. And again, I know a few people who do this with dolls. I know that Leah Rivera, for instance, is well known for doing this also, and there's others, you know, who know about it and do it on a regular basis. But it's a very beautiful way of working to get the healing that is needed. Now, when she did this healing, she would be lighting incense and then using a feather whisk or wing to smudge the incense over that doll, right? And to pray for the healing of the doll, for the removal of pain, for the removal of symptoms, for whatever could be done, right? So, again, it's just another thing that set her apart from, you know, the what I call the diminished neo-hoodoo of today, in which people reduce everything to a little candle spell or, you know, something like that. She made mojo bags. You can see, in fact, again on her air page, you can see her blessing a mojo bag with incense. And she used a lot of sage smudges, also pine needles, and she loved resin incense. She liked the real deal incenses. She liked, you know, frankincense and myrrh and dragon's blood. And she told me once she liked them because they made more smoke than some of these stick incenses or little powder incenses. She liked a big puff of smoke, and she liked sage for that reason. So I don't know what incense she's using in that mojo bag picture, but she's certainly wafting it over it and doing a beautiful job of preparing that mojo for a client.
She was such a wonderful, wonderful spirit. She had such a wonderful spirit. I can't stress that enough about someone, you know, and remembering them for those who didn't know her or, you know, but you can just tell. You could just see it. You could feel it. You could, her following, things that I heard, you know, of how wonderful she was. You just can't not remember that. And you can't forget.
Yeah.
We have to remember.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's see if we can bring in some more people. And thank you, Ms. Melanie, because really, truthfully, you are, of all the members of AIR, I'd say you and are one of the ones who are closest to her way of working. Isn't that true?
Very, very true.
Yeah.
And
also from Tennessee. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Although you are a white woman, but your style reminds me a lot of Rukiah's style. So, and that gentleness. So thank you very much for that. Let's see if we can bring in Professor Ames. Are you there?
I am. Hey, Ms. Kat. How are you?
Hi. Another person with roots in Tennessee.
Yes. Tennessee contingent, I guess. Paying tribute. What I just want to make comment about that was, you know, of course, when I started here and I read the profiles of everyone and kind of got to know at least the virtual person, what always really struck me about her practice was that it was so much about the whole person. You know, that she had a community center, that she developed a community where she was, and as I recall, it's not a big town in Ohio, but she was there and she had her presence. And that, and I think you kind of mentioned this, she cared about not just, you know, the sort of process, okay, you know, here's a phone call and we're going to light a candle next, right? It was about continuing through and building a relationship and healing people from the inside out, not just fixing a problem, but she talked about diet, the herbs, the whole healing. And I really find that admirable, and, you know, as a practitioner, it's something that, you know, gives a standard to try to meet. It's really a beautiful memory of her.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this is something that is so subtle, and some of the modalities that she used were so subtle. Jellyfish Rising in the chat room asked, I think that was who it was asked, can we explain about the raindrop technique that she used? She offered at her website a raindrop therapy. And I, of course, asked her about that, too. I said, what is the raindrop therapy? And she said, well, that is a thing where the person has a pain. She worked a lot with people who had arthritis or rheumatism or muscle aches and pains, and they had a pain. Let's say they had arthritis in their hand. And she would literally drip water onto them just a little bit at a time while focusing on the water, taking away the pain. She preferred to use real rainwater. She said she couldn't always get it, but she could. She preferred rainwater, but she could use tap water if she had to, or holy water, whatever she had, you know, that she would prepare. And this method, she said, sometimes a person would have, like, say, back pain, and they would just lay down on her massage table, and you know, with their, you know, skin to the air, and she would just drip this rainwater from her fingers, just drip it down and up their spine, and then massage, and then drip more, and then, you know. And she said it was a way of removing, through natural cleansing action of the rainwater, removing the negative holding of the muscles that were causing the backache or whatever it might be. Yeah, so that's what I know about it, Jellyfish Rising. That's what I know.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So, she did many, many interesting things, I'll tell you. Some of those, I don't know where they came from. I didn't, you know, some of them I'm sure she learned from various people in her travels. And go ahead.
Well, I think what's interesting is that her focus was steadfast, that she cared about healing. So I think you said this earlier, that she didn't really care to hold to a specific doctrine, except that the doctrine was, it needs to work. You know, where can I gain some knowledge? Where can I gain a technique to help the people in my community to get better?
Mm-hmm.
And I think because she was raised in it, in root work from her grandfather, that she didn't feel she had to prove anything or show the learning other than it was her calling. And I think that's really
right.
Noble.
That's for sure. Nagashiva said he has a few words to say about Rukiah, too. He knew her. Why don't you come on the air, honey?
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, and you also have family in Tennessee. I think everyone's got family in Tennessee here but me and Ollie.
Yeah, I think there's that, and there may be some common ethnic Native American background as well. I know that's part of my family on both sides, and I had my intersection with Reverend Rukaiya was one in which I was trying to help her do things that she found difficult, and that was things relating to technology, since I was trying to get her into the air, the group of people, and on the radio show, and things of that kind. And she was one of the most humble people that I've ever had the opportunity of working with. I am also a fan personally of New Thought and eclectic shamanism and charitableness and social justice. So we had a lot of things in common, and they didn't immediately become apparent. It was something that we occasionally mentioned between us. And I really appreciated her her kindness and her ability, like you were saying earlier, to be fully present and not focused on extraneous things. She knew her limits in the interactions that we were having, and she was like a gigantic heart willing to extend in a charitable manner to so many people. It was obvious in talking with her that that's how she was encountering others, and it was very clear on the air also that she was really fully immersed in spiritual work, and that this, I thought of that, to me, I came from out of a, in part at least, a New Age orientation to spirituality. It was something that I found in the South Bay, and it was something familiar to me, and then when she and I talked, it was something I recognized was in common. Her manner was, as I understood it, truly shamanic, in the sense that she wanted to serve a community, she wanted to engage in spiritual matters and healing and things across the board, whether it was communications or bringing her own pain and her own difficulties to bear in solving other people's problems. She was always on that point regardless, and I think it permeated her life and was apparent in every interaction I ever had with her.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and this brings up the very delicate subject of when the healer themselves falls ill.
Of course.
And this is something that people, if they stay in this profession long enough, will face. Can you be a healer if you yourself are dying? And she was very honest about that with me. She said she didn't want her physical condition to be publicized because it would be a distraction from her work. But we all are, you know, prey to illness, and we're all subject to the ills of the flesh. And she was positive to the end. She was firmly focused on health, did not wish to think about death or sickness, or to draw pity to herself, or to go on at length about suffering. She simply moved forward step by step, and she never, never wavered from her belief that she was still on earth to heal others. And she sought help, spiritual help from others, with me, for instance. But she accepted the truth of what was said and seen without needing to have it sugar-coated. Do you know what I'm saying? There was a honesty there. And that's the thing that is so amazing to me, is that up to the very end, she was still reading and prescribing and helping others, even as she herself slipped beyond the ability to be helped. And that takes a great soul to do that, to not just, you know, curl in on yourself and saying, oh, my God, look at me, I'm sick and I'm dying, and, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And she just went, no, my path is to help others, and I will be there at my task until I pass. And she was, I mean, as I said, she passed with her Hoodoo Psychics line on. You can't ask for more commitment than that.
You really can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So she really had something. As Black Cat says in the chat room, her path, Jellyfish said, her path kept her going. And I see that as true. And, you know, there is a lot of desire on the part of a healer to present themselves as immune from sickness. You know, preachers who don't want to talk about their own problems, mm-hmm. things like that. She was not like that. She was very, very, very forthcoming, very intelligent, very smart, and she understood the ways of the world, you know.
I always believe that healers, because they take on other people's, have to face problems mm-hmm. in their lives that are related to health and whatnot. I mean, it's not an uncommon thing to hear root doctors get sick more than other people. I mean, it mm-hmm. happens. And it's a sign of her commitment that even in her illness she continued on and continued to take on other people's burden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, can I interject something there?
Yes, please.
I'm sorry, I was cut off from the board and I just got back on again, so I didn't hear what was just said. But one of the things that I have found incredibly important about shamanism or neo-shamanism as it appears in, especially in the New Age world, but as it is understood generally too, is that illness is something, and especially early illness, is something that's a part of the shamanic life, and that this is part of what prepares people as a kind of initiation to do that kind of work. You aren't really, it's not just about healing other people, it's always about healing yourself and about healing the community.
That's so true. That is absolutely true. Let's take a little break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Rukaya Shaman, our fallen colleague. How about it, Miss Tammy Lee?
Yes, ma'am, Miss Kat. And y'all, support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. And once again, this is a special Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour in memory of Reverend Rukaya of AIR. Ms. Kat, I'm going to turn this back over to you, ma'am.
Okay. All righty. Well, if anyone else wants to speak about Rukaya or ask questions about her and what her work was like, just raise your hands in the chat room and Nagashiva will pick you up and put you on the line and let me know, okay?
I just wanted to share just one brief story about her, mm-hmm. and everyone's shared these wonderful stories. This was actually goes right back to the idea when we were talking about if I pinned you, you would feel it. And we were talking about different healing techniques and things like that, and I was talking about dream work, right? And mm-hmm. one of the things that I found so interesting talking to her about, she goes, "Do you know you can use the black mirror for dream work?" I said, "Oh yeah, you know, I've done that technique before." And she goes, "No. Let me show you something else." And she said, when you look at the mirror and you pull up the person, and this again speaks to her ability to really work in so many different modalities, and using the dark mirror for healing. Now, I had done dream work and influencing others and healing or destruction through the dark mirror before. But she said something very interesting. She goes, "Draw, you know, pull up their image in the dark mirror and you look at it." And I said, "Okay, so you look at it, and what do you do next?" She goes, "What you do is you reach your hand out, and this goes back to the pinching. She goes, reach your hand out as if you're going to reach through the mirror. And you have mm-hmm. to actually feel your hand reaching through. So how your hand feels, you have to feel it continuing on. She goes, go ahead and make a little pinching. And she did it, and I actually felt the pinch.
Wow.
And I was so impressed, and I went, that is amazing. I've done it for dream work. You know, you do the mirror. But I had never considered using the dark mirror in that fashion before. So just a little quick story about how she showed me, you know, here I was thinking I knew all there was about the dark mirror and scrying and using it for influencing work and whatnot. And she, within a matter of a couple of minutes, she showed me something completely new that I had not even considered, reaching through the mirror to actually touch someone. And I've incorporated that type of work in my work now, and it's all thanks to her.
I'm going to say something about that too, because when she did that healing treatment on me, she asked me in the way that is very common among medical workers, is it okay if I touch your body? Is it okay if I
mm-hmm.
examine and touch your body?
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel it.
Yeah.
Now, you could all say, whoa, Kat has a heightened imagination. But no, I actually felt it. And, you know, that she was basically touching me and examining the various parts of my body to see what was the problem. And it was very, very palpable, I guess is the word I want to say. It was palpable. You know?
Exactly.
So the dark mirror method is something that is... you know, it has had a bit of a revival, I guess you could say, lately. And people are, you know, you can buy dark mirrors. Used to be they all were handmade. And people say, well, Ms. Kat, but dark mirrors are so European. How did this hoodoo woman have this? Actually, the use of dark mirrors was really popularized in the United States of America by an African-American root worker named Pascal Beverly Randolph. And he used dark mirrors, scrying mirrors, and he sold them in the spiritualist churches and through spiritualist newspapers in the 19th century. He died in 1875. So if you all are thinking of dark mirrors as a sort of a Harry Potter thing, think again, okay? Think about Pascal Beverly Randolph, and who, interestingly, also lived in Tennessee at one point. Oh, he lived everywhere, but... he lived in New Orleans. He lived in Ohio. Actually, he ended up in Ohio when he died.
You know what?
But,
what's funny too is I was just going to remark about this: is the dark mirror and scrying is often, you're right, it's associated with a certain type of work you don't often think about in conjure. But the funny thing is some of the old school root doctors, especially male root doctors, more often than not were scryers more than they were card readers. Because, you know,
right.
There's become this association now of, oh, your root doctor's going to pull tarot. But when I was growing up, most of the male root doctors, they scryed. They used crystal balls.
Yeah. Same thing. I knew a lot of them to use that. And Lorinda Shire in the chat room says, I heard about using black water to do the same. Absolutely. People put ink in water and do that. Another thing that you can do, it's a very simple method and it's inexpensive, is get a black obsidian palm stone. They only cost a few dollars. They fit in the palm of your hand. They look like a little pool of ink. And if you can work with that, then you can go on to a more elaborate dark mirror if you wish, but that's the cheapest way to find out if you have an inclination toward dark mirror scrying. I have to say I use crystal balls, and my favorite and best one is solid obsidian, but I use my palm stone as much as anything else. And so that was what she worked with, and it is interesting because she didn't just use it to see, but she used it to reach out as a
yes.
portal, you might say. And I would say that that kind of working, you know, certainly was documented and reaches back to African-American spiritual doctor Pascal Beverly Randolph. He talks about using a dark mirror to influence people in love matters, to have them do right and so forth. And so, again, she came out of a tradition that is very of long standing and has a long background in African-American magical work, the black mirror.
Black mirror, which you don't, you know, it's kind of seeing a resurgence, but she was one of the first, I think, on air that really kind of did, besides yourself, obviously, that did the work. I came after her, right? She was on air or I was by 2 years, I think, even, or
yeah.
a year and a half. And she was one of the few that did that dark mirror work. Now we see it a little bit more common, but I remember when I first joined up, I think it was really just you and her, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember anyone else having that description.
Yes, I don't know anyone else at the time who was using that dark mirror technique.
Right.
Now, that was, she and I had that in common. And
yeah.
We had, you know, I'm very still to this day, very much in awe of her use of herbs and plants. You know, I wrote a book on it. She loved my book. I mean, she was very complimentary about my book. But she knew all of that that was in the book and then some. And she used it a lot. And she made baths with fresh herbs, sometimes with dried herbs. But she liked to use fresh herbs. She would take, one of the things she told me that she did was to take parsley, just parsley from a grocery store. Now, parsley is one of these herbs that has many, many uses and meanings. It can be used for protection. It can be used for insight. There's a lot of things that you can use parsley for. And she would take a little bundle of parsley and use it as a whisk to whisk up her herb bath. In other words, she would put in some bath salt. She would put in some whatever it was she was going to put in that had something. And she would use parsley to whisk it up. And I thought that was super great because she couldn't use her beloved feathers, you see, in the bath.
Mm-hmm. She's also one of the few that made herbal teas. And that's something that really, you know, speaks to the work that she did. It wasn't just because we think of cleansing and we think of healing. And a lot of modern-day hoodoo practitioners only think of what? The bath, right? But that, you know, I know we've been reiterating this, but you can't reiterate it enough. There was really a whole package thing with Rukaiya. She didn't just treat you with a bath. She didn't prescribe things that you could eat. She would prescribe dietary things. She would prescribe teas. And it was healing from the inside out. Your body was healed. Your mind was healed. Your spirit was healed.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing about teas is interesting. I'm right now working on a typesetting for Aura LaForest's book on hoodoo baths and bathing. And it's a very nice book. It's going to be, you know, ready at our Hoodoo Heritage Festivals May 3rd and 4th. That book will be there, and it'll be a giveaway to people who come out for the festival, which I ought to be promoting here. But Aura has written about that extensively, and Aura LaForest is also an herbologist and talks about teas. And you know, that's a whole subject. She touches on it lightly because it's a book on bathing and cleansing. But one of the things that Rukaiya did, which Aura does know about and mention, and I was just reading it today, was when you give a person the bath, you may reserve a little bit of the bath tea. This would be herbal bath tea, not a mineral salts or anything like that, but a little herbal bath tea and dilute it a little bit more and then drink it. So that while you are having that foot bath, you might also be drinking that same thing as a tea or a different tea, depending on what your need was. And that is something that she prescribed, and she would send people home with little packages of tea to brew for themselves at home and take for a certain number of days. And that is a very old way of working. It's a way of working, again, that is still valid, and many people still do it. Aura is one of the ones who does it to this day, and I know there are many others. I certainly give people teas, and there are others who do that too, you know. Lorinda asked, is Aura Canadian? Yes, Aura is Canadian. And she's very, very wise in the ways of herbology. A great lady. She's expecting a baby, and I hope her baby is born I think it's February. I think we're in baby realm now with Aura LaForest. So. She's a great gal too. All right. Well, you know, it's hard when someone passes to say, you know, that's it. That's all we're going to see of her. And if you came too late, you missed her, you know. And so we do have memories of her. We do have pictures of her work. And we will also at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival be having a memorial for Rukaiya there. And we had talked, and we've already talked about, because Eddie was a person who came to the Huda Heritage Festivals and helped us put them on and did presenting there on a regular basis, we're going to have an old tradition that's used. It's called the vacant chair. It's where you set up a chair at a table with all of the things of that person as if they were there. Well, now it looks like we're going to have two vacant chairs. And there will be a vacant chair for Dr. E and a memorial book to sign. And there will also be a vacant chair for Reverend Rukaya with a memorial book to sign. And we'll do our best to lay out things the way she would have had it, her white crystal ball, her dark mirror, some feathers, always feathers. That woman never worked without feathers. And you know, just a little bit of a picture of who she was. And people can look at, come by that table. This will be in the reader's tent at the Hoodoo Heritage Festival. And sign the guest book, and we will try to get that to her family so that people in the family know how much she was loved and respected and honored by folks all over the world. Okay? So I'd like to spend a little time talking about our plans for the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, if I may. We have a few minutes here. If I can shift gears, is that all right?
Yeah, it's perfectly fine.
Okay. So, well, we've been, you know, hit a couple of hard blows here, but we're still soldiering on. And the Hoodoo Heritage Festival is on track for May 3rd and 4th. If you go to the website for it, which you can find, there's a number of ways to find it. The easiest way is hoodooheritagefestival.com. But you can also find it via missionaryindependent.org. That's the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church's website. You just click on Hoodoo Heritage Festival. You get right to it. You'll see that we have quite a beautiful lineup of people planned. There is going to be, there will be 10 different workshops. This year we're running it in such a way that you'll pay for the whole day rather than just pay by the workshop. It's going to be easier for us bookkeeping-wise, and also you'll actually get a better value because at the end of the day, you would, if you had taken everything, you would actually pay less if you pay by the day. So we have a one-day plan and a two-day plan, which has a discount. And you can check out who all will be there. This is not a firm, completely firmed up lineup, but it's $140 for Saturday, and for that you get five hands-on classes. You get a free Saturday-only opening service, which will be led by Conjurman Ali, not to be missed. You'll get free food and drinks, and you'll get two books that will be published. It will be given to you. Goodie bags full of stuff. And, of course, you can also get readings, which you pay separate for, from all the readers who will be there on Sunday. Same price, $140. Five hands-on classes. Same goodie bag, same the food and drink is included. There will be three books on Sunday. And, of course, there will be the reader's tent will be set up. Or you can take the full weekend for $260. That saves you some money. And you get 10 classes, 5 books, food and drink for 2 days. It's quite a bargain. And so some of the things that we will be teaching will be the Kimbanda opening ceremony for Eshu. This is going to be Ali in his South American valence. And the House of Kimbanda. I'm going to be teaching wild crafting for herbal magic. This is basically you get to follow me around, trudging around our 2 acres, picking plants and dehydrating them in a dehydrator. And if you stick around, you can take them home with you. I will talk about how to wildcraft. People say, oh, I couldn't do that. I don't live out in the woods. No, you can wildcraft on a city street, and I'm going to show you how. And also Leo Rivera will show how to dry and vacuum pack the herbs. We'll have a lunch. We're going to do bathing and cleansing spells. This is Aura LaForest's new book, but Aura won't be there because she's going to have a brand new baby. So Leah Rivera is going to teach that class based on Aura's book, and you get the book for free. Then we're going to have a panel discussion of money spells, and pretty much everybody's going to be in on that who's not presenting a workshop. So I know we've kind of got commitments from Miss Elvira, from Lou Flores, Cast Excelsior, Professor Charles Porterfield, a man who many, many people have not seen in a long time, and oh, we're so glad he's going to be coming out. And Ms. Phoenix LaFay and Ms. Robin are going to be doing a panel discussion on money spells. Then Madam Nadia is going to be talking about how to use cards, playing cards, tarot cards, Lenormand cards, not just for readings, but how to do spell work based off of those card readings. And this is a unique thing. You don't have to be a professional reader or root worker to take this class. She's going to show you how you can lay down cards for yourself without being a reader. They will tell you whether incense, whether candles, whether bathing, whatever it's going to be, will be more efficient for you based on the cards you draw. And then we're going to close up with Dr. Johannes coming all the way from Sweden, and he's going to do the introduction to Swedish trolldom. This is the long-awaited thing. He was here last year and taught us about Swedish bread spells. This is going to be the whole nine yards of Swedish trolldom. This is going to be a fantastic opportunity. If you are of European descent, don't miss it. If you're curious about Norse paganism and how it affected the Christian magic of the Norse people. If you have any Swedish, Norwegian, Danish, Finnish, whatever in you, Icelandic, come on out and check out this thing on Swedish trolldom, because it's going to be an amazing thing. Also, it contains some Germanic stuff. I'll give you a hint. Then on Sunday, we're going to have a spiritualist candle service with Apollo Dark, and this is going to be a road opening spell, and you're going to be able to do road opening and block busting and know the difference between the two and know when to use which one. And it's an actual spiritual service. You'll be actually given work to do, and you will be doing it. And then we have a Conjuring Love, Passion, and Glamour workshop, and this is going to be Madam Pamita from Southern California and Madam Nadia. It's the two madams, and the madams will teach you all about glamour, passion, and love spells. And then Michelle Jackson, great bone reader, is going to be teaching her form of bone reading. And this is going to come with a book, a 96-page book, free copy of the book. Then Michael Maurer, Miss Michael, will be teaching Bible magic. There'll be a free book on Bible magic, Psalms, and other pieces of scripture. And then we close with Conjure Manali, Defending Yourself Against the Dark Arts, and he's going to be giving a class on how to protect against people throwing at you. Okay, so that's
how to kick some ass, as I like to say.
Yeah, how to kick their asses. So that is what's coming up. We want everyone to come on out. You can go there. You can buy tickets now. Tickets are on sale. Get that discount ticket by getting for 2 days. All right. Let's turn this over to Miss Tammy Lee and see what she has to say.
Well, yes, ma'am, Miss Kat. Thank you, Miss Kat and Conjurman Ali, and thank you, Miss Melanie and Professor Ames and Nagashiva, for this special input in today's show, Remembering Reverend Rukaya. Next week, we will have a special rebroadcast of Reverend Rukaya's Shaman's last guest appearance on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour from February 26th of 2012. And once again, y'all, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. Brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. And once again, you can find Ms. Cad via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman Ali at conjurmanali.com in Mission Viejo. I'm your announcer, Miss Tammy Lee, joining you from TripleCrownConjure.com in Pensacola, Florida. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. The shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you so much for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Tammy Lee, and thanks for that. Thank you, Ali, and thank you, Professor Ames, Melanie, Nagashiva, for helping us remember Rukaya Shaman, a great worker, sadly taken from us, but as Ms. Melanie said, God wanted her to be an angel, and there's where she is now. She's always going to be remembered as a beautiful, beautiful root worker, and a person whose teachings did not passed away because she taught them to others. And that's what's so special about the fact that she was a member of AIR and a member of Hoodoo Psychic. She taught a lot of people.
Indeed.
Okay. Well, that's it. Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Peace be with you.